So good evening, everyone. I'm Kelsey Brockmore, and I am the chair of the Writers Advisory Council. It is 6:35, and I am bringing the December 2012 RAC meeting to order. I want to remind everyone that the meeting tonight is being live streamed, so please remember when you speak to make sure your mic is turned on so that all can hear you. First up is the public comment period. John, do we have anyone tonight that wishes to address the council?
Okay.
Just a minute. Okay. Robert Youngman, please join us at the table here.
Good evening. My name is Robert Youngman. I'm here tonight because on Monday night I was stopped at Silver Spring Station by a Metro police officer who claimed that I had not attempted to pay the exit fare. In fact, my Smart Trip card had not scanned. I presented my Smart Trip card to the officer. He confiscated the card, scanned it, and then said, "This is an elderly person's Smart Trip card." I said, "No, this is a handicapped Smart Trip card, which was issued to me right in this very building because I'm hearing impaired." The officer then took my Metro identification, confiscated it also, and refused to give either one back, and issued me a ticket for not attempting to pay the exit fare. This is a very upsetting incident to me because if I cannot count on the police to protect me, who can I count on? I feel a great sense of injustice about this incident, and I chose tonight to come here and speak out because of this. That's pretty much my statement.
Okay. Thank you for coming tonight. I just have a couple of questions, and some of the other RAC members may have questions as well. Were you able to file a complaint or to follow up on this incident, and have you heard back from WMATA if you did?
I was told that I would have to go to Montgomery County to file a complaint. I'm understandably hesitant to step foot through Silver Spring Station again. I do have a copy of the ticket. It is a $50 fine. It's not a problem to pay this, but it is a matter of principle. And I believe there must be surveillance video of this happening.
Okay, thank you. Joseph?
I just want to ask Don a real quick question. And if you don't know, I can understand. But is it... John, is it required that people go in person to file a complaint?
To file a complaint?
Yes. To file a complaint like this gentleman would have to file. Does he have to go in person, or is there another way?
I don't know. If he was told he needs to go to Montgomery County, that may be something different. Obviously, you can always contact our customer, you know, our customer comment folks, the customer service people. But this may be something different.
He would contact customer service to file a police complaint?
No, that's why I'm saying it may be something different. I'm saying he can contact customer service to file a customer service complaint. Off the top of my head, I don't know about filing a police complaint, and so I don't want to steer you wrong.
I don't want to belabor this too much longer, but if we can find out how to file a police complaint and get that to them, can we do that?
Okay. I was just told tickets are actually issued by the jurisdiction, so it would need to be something he would take up.
I don't think that the ticket is so much the issue as the officer's behavior is the issue.
And was right. This was a Metro Transit officer, or I assume it was, if they were, okay.
The Metro officer, right?
So can we find out how to file a complaint with, I don't know if this mic is on, but can we find out how to file a complaint with the Metro, with the transit police, and then maybe get their information? And
we have Mr. Youngman's information.
All right, thank you.
Great. So we'll look into this, Mr. Youngman, and get back to you. And will you also please keep us apprised of how the situation unfolds from this point forward?
Yeah, we will.
Okay. Thank you.
The next person I have is, Drew H.
Okay. Will Drew H. please come forward? Thanks.
I'm here to complain about you as a committee. I feel that you are not doing your job serving the 750,000 people that ride Metro daily. You generally sit on your hands. You do not communicate with the riders. In the past month, a customer has been murdered. Where is your outrage? Where is your statement? Where are your questions to the Metro PD? Where are they? Have you reached out to the general public? Have you questioned the police department? Have you questioned Sarles? And I'm not talking about their spokespeople and their lieutenants. I'm asking, have you talked to them? You have not. You're sitting on your hands. You spent 37 minutes last month talking about public input during these meetings. Yet we get 5 minutes at the beginning of a meeting. Yet tonight, you're going to spend 10 minutes on a 2012 recap. You're going to spend 15 minutes talking about meeting efficiency and structure. Meanwhile, two or three of you left early last month. How dare you think you represent us? How dare you? You do not represent us. You're the scraps that Metro lets you feed off of. Start helping the people. You're not doing your job. Where are the answers? How does a whole system shut down because somebody doesn't know the difference between Eastern Daylight Time and Eastern Standard Time? How does that happen? How does a whole system in the summertime shut down for 30 minutes because they can't see their trains? And all of a sudden I hear, oh, it's because people are logging on and off. That's false. I'm in IT. I know the difference. You should be ashamed. I hear nothing from you. You do not communicate. You do not communicate with the public.
Can we rate you up about 15 more seconds?
We've got Screw your 15 here. Seconds. You okay. took 37, now you're 37 over the minutes. Line. Now you're over the line.
No.
You
sir.
Are not listening to the public.
Okay, sir. I'm How do
we
ask
have?
You.
Why do we have to keep taking this from Metro? Why? Can somebody answer me that? And what are you guys doing to help the rider, to give us a voice? What are you doing?
Okay. Thank
You're
you,
having
sir.
Meetings about sir, structure and recaps
I'm gonna now ask you
and meeting schedules.
To move away from the table, we've heard
Seriously.
Your comments. We understand.
What are you doing?
We'd like to respond if you give us. Two.
Well,
please go back
I'd
to
I'd like to hear it right now.
Please return to your seat.
No, I'm not returning my seat.
Sir, you're out of order right now.
Screw your 37 minutes.
All right. So first, let me say thanks for your comments. And to all of those that are in attendance, let me let you know that the 2 hours that we meet here are our official meeting time. We do a lot behind the scenes. We do a lot talking to staff members. Do we have a lot more to do? We certainly do. Do we work within what the board has given us as far as our bylaws? We do. And we're appreciative of the public and other riders that can come in and speak to us and comment in a constructive, respectful, and professional manner. A little bit later on in the agenda, we will get to our RAC overview that talks about those things that we have accomplished this year. So, John, I'm going to ask that we go on to the next speaker.
Sure, it's Chris Barnes.
Chris, please join us at the table.
I have no script tonight. I am Chris Barnes, also known as Fix WMATA. I have come before you before and have had fairly harsh words. So I'm going to end the year on a good note. I want to say thank you to the RAC. The fact that we're live streaming tonight is a huge accomplishment, and I want to thank whoever had any part in getting that to happen, whether it be on the RAC or with the agency. Getting our voice out for those who can't be here is extremely important, and that's a huge step. Thank you very much. I also want to speak on an agenda item about the headways during Veterans Day and Columbus Day. I sat in my office, which overlooks Silver Spring Station, and timed the trains on Veterans Day, and they were 36-minute headways inbound at Silver Spring. I'll be the first person to tell you that when you have reduced ridership when the government is off work, you certainly should reduce the train's headways. However, the problem was that at the same time, they continued doing track work, which included single tracking. And this adversely affected people. 36 minutes is commuter rail time. I mean, you can buy Amtrak tickets based on 36 minutes. So when we get to that agenda item, I'll most likely skip public comment, but I just wanted to provide that input. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate your words. Yeah, it is a great accomplishment to have a live stream and have our riders and the public be able to more easily access us and understand what we do here, as well as hear the good information that comes from staff. During their presentations. And as you said, I think we're all looking forward to the holiday schedule presentation that's going to happen in a few minutes. John, is that it as far as?
That's it. That's all that I have signed up.
Great. So next on the agenda, we have approval of the agenda. Does anyone have any comments on the agenda as it is? Any changes to make? Yes, Deborah. Is this the minutes or the agenda? We're looking at the agenda right now.
Okay. Oh, okay.
All right, so seeing that there are no comments on the agenda, I'm going to ask someone to place a motion that we approve the agenda. Thanks, Pat. A second?
Second.
Great, thanks, Ben. Okay, all those in favor of the agenda, please just raise your hands.
No objections, all right.
Yeah, no objections, great. Agenda approved. Next agenda item is approval of past meeting minutes. We actually only have 1 month's meeting minutes. That's June here of 2012. So I am going to ask, we got those last week. I am going to ask, since we've had sufficient time to review them, for anyone to mention to John any comments they might have right now, and then for us to take a vote. So any comments for John? Chris.
As the minutes reflect, I was missing from the meeting. I found the minutes very helpful. Reminding me of what I had missed while I was away at a out-of-state convention. Thank you, John.
Great. Any other comments about the June 2012 minutes? Hearing none.
I move to approve the June minutes.
Okay. Can I get a second?
Second.
Ben and Pat. Wonderful. Okay. All in favor of approving?
I think that was the comment that Deborah was trying to make.
Deborah, I'm sorry. You had a comment about the agenda minutes, I mean the meeting minutes.
Month of, okay. The page 9, I guess the sentence not completed, the third paragraph. It said, Mr. Henry noted that Metro, I guess the sentence is not complete.
Yes. John, I think you were aware of that earlier, I think.
I am not aware. It should be highlighted.
That's one thing that I need to fix. I highlighted it just to let you know that I'm aware of that, and I'll fix it before I post them finally.
Okay, sounds good. So now I'm going to ask that we take a vote because Carl put the motion on the floor, Ben seconded it. So all in favor of the June 2012 meeting minutes, please raise your hand. Any objections? And no one's abstaining. Okay, great. So the June 2012 meeting minutes are approved. All right. So now we have our presentation on holiday service levels. We have three staff members present, Mr. Kubicek, Ms. Ji, and Mr. Hamry. Would the three of you please come forward, and we are all ears. Is it just two? Okay, sorry, just two. Mr. Hamry and Mr. Kubicek.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Thank you for having us. If I could, I'll go ahead and I'll start. Again, my name is Dave Kubicek. I'm the Deputy General Manager of Operations. I'll focus on pretty much the holidays and a lot of specific rail items, and then naturally have Mr. Hammer here because they support us, you know, in parallel. Just based off the request that I received, I'm just going to go through, you know, holiday service level. And it's just to recap, WMATA recognizes 10 holidays. Those are New Year's Day, Martin Luther King Day, and then every fourth year we have the inauguration, as y'all know, which is part of that process. President's Day, Memorial Day, Independence Day, Labor Day, Columbus Day, Veterans Day, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Okay, of which, I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, what has occurred, what's occurring now as far as our focus on getting the railroad back to a sustained state of good repair, a lot of work. We know it's very, very inconvenient for customers, and it's not something that we really like to do, but it's something that we really must do because sustaining this and making sure that we're in a state of good repair for safety for everybody involved is our number one priority. As we go around planning this, naturally, there are some holidays that you see that we do not conduct any work. And since I've been here, I stay away from those holidays where there is no scheduled work or no major outages. And, for example, New Year's Day, we have no work or anything else scheduled, and a lot of times you'll see us even soften up around the weekends and such. That's typically a Sunday-level type service, which is, you know, about the frequencies, about 15 minutes on the outside outlying areas, and if you're in the core, you see, you know, about 7 to 8 minutes in frequency. Martin Luther King, if there's not an inauguration that's taken place, then we do do perform work around it. But, for example, this coming year, in 2013, that's a day that we really, realistically, the whole weekend, we keep that free because of the ridership and the activities in the region. Naturally, 4th of July, that's another holiday that's, you know, recognized regardless of its day and such. Its frequency of service is a little bit different because, as everybody's aware, there's a great event out on the National Mall. There's a lot of activity and stuff that's taking place. So we call it probably a Saturday, but a modified schedule, because we'll start out with a lighter service in the morning. But by the time we get in the evening time, and especially after the mall, we probably have a rail car count of what we might see during a peak period. To be able to clear the mall effectively and safely and as quickly as possible with that amount of people that are all converging. And it's quite remarkable. Thanksgiving Day, that's another day. And even around the weekend, that's where we really stay away from any work to make sure that we're not inconvenience anybody, any customers or anything else in the region. That typically follows a Sunday-type schedule. Depending upon what's planned in the region stuff, we could deploy a little bit extra service and stuff, but that's pretty much what we follow. And also on Christmas Day, basically that's another day that naturally we do not conduct any work, and we try to just keep the railroad open. And again, it's a Sunday type schedule. If we know that there's a special event or anything else, and we might add a little bit, you know, more extra service and stuff on a respective line, but it really depends. Now we'll get into the days that are probably where we have a lot of work that we tie up. Again, like President's Day, a holiday, we would target a Saturday-type level service. But again, it really depends if we're having shutdowns. It really depends if we're doing, you know, the single-tracking, you know, type of activity. We try to establish the, you know, headways the best we can. You're going to see we strive to try to maintain at least something in the frequency of 12 minutes, if at all possible. But since we're a two-track system, you know, we're realistic that's not something that we can always attain on that specific part of the railroad. And we do apologize for the inconvenience, but we have got to get in there and to conduct this work, just bottom line. So what we do that sometimes creates some of the extended headways is a lot of times that since we have to single track and on a two-track system based off of its distance, what staff has found is that they typically will run more eight-car trains, if not all eight-car trains handling the capacity of that. Naturally, we work very closely with bus, where we establish, you know, bus shuttle services. We seem to be getting good feedback on that, where we have these, you know, affected areas. Then the other component of this naturally would be our communications outreach, where we, you know, we tell individuals in advance, you know, on this holiday, this is where the work is going to be conducted. These are the expected frequencies that we see out there. Again, sometimes they might be a little bit longer if we had a, you know, we could have an activity, sick customer, we could have police activity, we could have a train that fails, you know, anything that could also knock that out of sequence. And so we're very, very sensitive to the recovery time. So I would say the holidays where we see the work, naturally, are going to be, you know, President's Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day, Columbus Day, and Veterans Day. Those are the days that I really target, you know, the work activity around there. And the reason why we do look at that is we've seen in a window of, you know, 72-plus hours, based off of our efforts, we are effectively at times doing anywhere from, you know, a month to 3 months' worth of work if we were to follow traditional patterns. And I cannot stress it enough that the work that we're doing out there is to improve the safety and reliability of the system. If this system has an issue with its track bed, have you all seen beforehand, what happens, we have to start putting in slow orders, which basically throws slow. Not only does it just slow down the railroad for that respective day, but it could impact it upon weeks upon end. The other component is by us addressing the National Transportation Safety Bureau recommendations, like guarded number 8 switches, changing out these train control modules. If we were to try to establish this stuff in a standard protocol without, you know, unfortunately inconvenience a lot of people, we're talking about years upon years upon years of effectively getting these programs out there. And when you leave this stuff in this stage with the duty cycle that we see out there, this system is continuing to wear. And one of the things I'd share is that, you know, we pull out almost 900 rail cars a day. You know, this system, you know, 5 years ago was a couple of hundred cars less. This system is going to continue to grow. And so one of the things is we have to make sure that we get out in front of this maintenance. We have to be able to sustain it. The agencies and our board has done a great job of supporting us to provide the right equipment and the right materials, but unfortunately we just need the time to address the backlog that is out there. So I would turn it over to Jim, and I know that there's a public comment of this as well.
All right. Well, just to speak to the holiday, we've had a set pattern for many, many decades of service types on the major holidays when ridership is really severely reduced. However, I noticed on what we call the four minor holidays, ML King, Presidents, Columbus, and Veterans, there's significantly more and different ridership patterns than you get on a typical Saturday, which is the service plan that we would normally run. In your package, I've provided some data. So in 2010, for Veterans Day, we ended up having something like 30% more people ride the Saturday service than we were prepared for, than a normal Saturday. And so what I did at that time was went through and I compared the ridership on every route that operated that day to what a normal weekday was. And where I identified that there was a significant percentage of riders showing up on that day because the private sector is still going to work, we developed a new service strategy called Saturday Enhanced to accomplish a couple of things. One is to provide enough capacity where it's needed in the Saturday service plan. Sometimes we'll run an example, we'll run an N6 route configuration on a Saturday, or we used to, rather than the N2. And so the N6, which was set up for 30-minute service, was unable to provide enough capacity for the riders that wanted to come down Massachusetts Avenue. So we create what we call an enhanced Saturday, and we identify additional trips on the timetable that we will run to supplement the regular Saturday service. The other thing we noticed is that when you go to a Saturday service, there's no service to Laurel, Clinton, Bowie, Springfield, Burke, some of the outlying areas where we run weekday-only service, but there are still people that need to get to work. And we want to be the bus operator for everybody, not just the folks in the core jurisdictions. And so, working closely with the jurisdictions, we identified coverage areas and particular trips that would ensure that there was connectivity to Laurel for folks that wanted to work. So in your package, then, I have a list of all of the lines and what we do with them on a Saturday enhanced service. Some we just run the regular Saturday schedule. Some we add additional trips. Some route configurations where there is very little ridership, we don't run it. And so this is the summary of what we do. I've also included a table of all of the holidays that we do run, and you can see, depending on the type of day, the type of ridership expected, we do different things. We'll run a Sunday on a major holiday like a Thanksgiving or a Christmas or a New Year's. That's our lowest level of ridership. That's designed for about 130,000 people. On a Saturday, we'll run 230. If we'll run, and then on a Saturday enhanced, we've got enough capacity to get up to about 300. And then where there's a regular weekday, that's our average is about 450. I've included in the package here a summary of the minor holidays for this year. We had 177,000 last ML King because it was cold. We were running a bus shuttle, and there was snow in the air, so it was relatively low ridership. But you can see on Veterans Day of this year, we had almost 250,000 riders on the pattern. One day that could qualify, but we run a regular weekday, is the day after Thanksgiving, the Black Friday. A lot of people are off. A lot of people are traveling different patterns, so we get relatively lower ridership. And just to answer the general question of who rides, how many, where, and when, I've included our October monthly report. So those of you who like to dig into data have the entire ridership of all of the routes, and you can take a look and compare. And with that, I'll be prepared to answer any questions.
Thank you. So with our new procedure, we do allow the public to ask, to give comments first. And so what I'd like to do, though, so I can make sure I allocate our time wisely, will all of the RAC members that have a question just raise your name tag so I can keep that in mind? Okay. Okay. Do we have any members of the public that have a comment? We have two, three. Okay, I'm going to ask Mr. Rashke, Kurt Rashke, to come up first. And I'm going to ask you to remember to speak into the microphone and to keep your comment at 1 minute because we do have such interest from the council on this. Thanks.
Sure. I understand that we are to phrase our remarks as comments and not questions. So I would just make the point that, and I should preface this by saying that I live in Silver Spring, so we've seen some pretty poor headways, especially on some of these holidays when that's combined with single tracking. And I would ask the RAC to inquire as to sort of where the breaking point is between running a really rather poor rail service versus running bus shuttles, because you know, last weekend we had the shutdown, and the shuttle was flawless. I'd rather take a shuttle that's running a five-minute headway than take a rail service that's honestly irregular. It may be scheduled for 20 minutes, but then, you know, something happens in the single-tracking area, and they've got to get a train out. And, I mean, Mr. Kubisak, I'm sure you're well aware how quickly the delays mount, and next thing you know, of course, the PIDs are out the whole time, and next thing you know, you've been standing on a very cold platform for, you know, upwards of half an hour, rather than a very quick and warm hop past Tacoma and on to Fort Totten and back on the rail system.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Drew H. and then Chris Barnes. And remember, 1 minute, please.
If Metro notices on a track working, you're working on the weekend or during the holiday, and the morning rush is packed, and you're getting complaints, is there somehow that they can adjust for rush hour traffic? I worked this past holiday, and, you know, Twitter was abuzz about, you know, it's packed, and we were getting feedback that, sorry, we're on a schedule. If we're supposed to be flexible, can Metro be flexible the day of, you know, sorry there's track work, but you got, you know, two-thirds of your normal traffic trying to get to work or wherever. So is there a way that Metro can be looking at the numbers and then go, okay, we need to add more trains in the afternoon PM rush?
Thanks. Chris Barnes?
Obviously, I lied. I do have a comment. Unfortunately, I think there's a little bit of a double standard when it comes to Monday track work. I've seen track work canceled because of sporting events. When teams pay for extra service, all of a sudden the track maintenance gets canceled. And for those of us who aren't government employees and have to work these holidays where most of the government's off, this comes across as a double standard. And I understand that you guys are behind. I understand there's a lot that has to be done. But along the lines of what the last commenter said, there needs to be a little bit of flexibility. If you have to continue track work into Monday, maybe you can hold off during the rush hours. So you give people a two-hour period where they have normal Saturday headways of 12 to 20 minutes instead of 36 minutes. But otherwise, you're going to have incredibly crowded platforms, which add to crowded trains, which adds to door problems and offloads. It becomes a domino effect. I think there's a little give and take on both sides, and I appreciate your presentation. Thank you.
Thanks. Now we're going to go to the rack, and I'm going to start with Victoria and go around the table this way. And so please remember to speak in your mic and to keep your comment to about a minute and 30 seconds so that we can get a response from staff.
Thank you for your presentation. It just put me in mind that I'm wondering when you'll have the updated list of major track work for 2013. I know like the entire list for 2012 is on Metro Ford right now, but it would be very helpful to have that updated and to also possibly list single tracking info on there, because that affects me a lot, but I don't see that until a few days before it's actually going to happen. But if I could plan, you know, several weeks ahead like I can with the major track work, that will be helpful.
Thanks. You can respond.
Okay, sure. For the 2013 activity, we are finalizing that report. It'll be out in January. Probably the biggest thing that's kind of caught us is with the inauguration. There's been a lot of planning and preparation, you know, naturally around that. But we will forecast it out for our major outages. That was something, if you've noticed, that it wasn't done a few years ago, and we've been able to plan and look ahead from a single tracking perspective. I can check with our staff and with our media relations to see what they're posting and stuff. I have, for example, part of our success is I have a weekly meeting with all of the engineers, safety, track departments, all the major stakeholders, and we typically are going out about 2 months in advance, and we're talking about actual, you know, status of materials and stuff. It's a large undertaking, but I could see, I do know that they communicate, you know, over on the weekends and stuff, but we could check to see if we could push it out a little bit more advance.
Thank you. The headways are so long now, it's definitely helpful. Like, I even plan events, and it's helpful for me now. Thank you.
You bet.
Great. Carol?
I'm wondering if Metro gets in touch with large employers or has access to data from employers so you can build in what employers plan to do on some of these days into your projections, or do you use that, or do you just use historic ridership figures?
I think it's a combination of. Naturally, the government drives a lot of what's taking place. Probably what we're becoming more and more sensitive to is throughout the rail network, there's a lot of local activities and events that are taking place, festivals, gatherings, just a variety of things. And so that has and that is becoming more factored in on how we establish track work and where we're looking at, and where we might see one line where they might not have anything planned, we would try to look to shift work and everything.
I just want to clarify, I was talking about non-governmental employers.
Yes, we pretty much work off of the historical information of what we've seen.
Thanks. Barbara?
Hi. I certainly understand the challenge of trying to find enough time for this, the repair work. I know it's really important. I think people understand they're going to have longer wait times. I think they can anticipate that when they know they're not getting the holiday that the federal workers get. I think that where I sensed all the frustration was with the single tracking, because often, you know, that just makes extra time beyond normal having fewer trains. And then, I know coworkers that took 2 hours to go 5 miles because they had to get off the train, get on a shuttle, get back on a train, and it was... it was really rough. One of my questions for you, or I have two questions. One is, there may have been some notice that went out. I mean, I got an alert because I'm on the alerts for the text alerts for changes, but I think I got it either Thursday or Friday. There may have been other things, but I didn't see other things. But I immediately alerted all my coworkers so that they could plan not to come in. And I know there are a lot of employers who, when there have been big events, you know, like when their World Bank was going to be picketed and whatever, you know, the word really gets out. And then people can, if they have those options, stay home. I'm thinking, is it possible to have a bigger media campaign that lets people know about the major track work on a day that a lot of people were planning to work and had no, didn't know there was any reason not to? Nobody that I worked with had any idea there wouldn't be normal service that day. Is there some kind of additional media plan that?
It's a great suggestion. It's something that we would take very serious. If you've got some venues that you think that would work better than what we're doing right now, because I see where our information is making it on a lot of media outlets such as newspaper, even, you know, I see the TV that's working on it. We do, for the customers that utilize our services, you could sign up, you know, for Metro Alerts or, you know, to, so that way you're in tune with what we're doing. If there's other ideas, we'd definitely be open to it to be able to communicate on what's taking place, you know, when we're working on
this. Because there have been other events, I was more aware of than this.
Okay.
My other question would be one that came up from our public was, is it feasible to do some flexibility? Because if you see incredible ridership in the morning, to know that, okay, at night you're going to have incredible ridership too, is it? Can you still do some flexible planning? Is that possible?
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up again. I really like to answer this one here. You know, the work that we're doing on this rail system, we are cutting up concrete. We are tearing out thousands of feet of rail. We are coring things. It is, and the other component is that we, not only do we have our workforce in here, but we are bringing in other contractors. We have mobilized a large area. The one thing that would concern me, if we were to try to put everything back together, it takes a certain time for concrete to cure. It takes a certain time for the epoxies and the materials and stuff to set, so that when we start setting steel and start putting things in place, that it's unfortunate, but once we have that much of an area that's tore up and then they're in the process of putting it back, there are just some things that it just takes a while to set and everything else. And unfortunately, like on Veterans Day and stuff, whenever we saw the amount of ridership and everything else on some of the areas that we had set up in that venue, we were just unable to get around it. I mean, if it would have been something like where we're changing out like railroad ties and maybe we can temper maybe some of our work, you know, to kind of pull out of it, you know, we might have to run some slows or anything else. But we're not doing just light work out there. You know, this is steel, it's concrete, it's sealing of tunnels, it's changing out. We're actually jacking up bridges up on the weekend, for example, changing out bearings and everything else. And so whenever we have a big bridge that's jacked up and stuff, it's not like that we can just walk away from it and we don't want to do a partial job, because that could also throw off the geometry of the alignment and would create other things. So.
Thank you. That understanding is very helpful.
Okay.
So we've got about 14 minutes left. Just want to keep everyone aware of how much time we have. Ben?
Yeah, thanks for your presentation. I think it's great to hear this level of detail because as a writer, I don't really hear a lot of that level of detail. And I think one of the frustrations that came out on Veterans Day is that people didn't understand where the track work was going or what, you know, to what extent it's already been done. You know, I think Metro did a pretty good job of saying we need to do this track work and here's why, and the, you know, Metro Forward and all that sort of thing. But what we haven't heard is the follow-up, as in terms of we're 50% done, we're 60% done, or we're behind schedule and we need to do this work on Veterans Day because we're behind schedule. And I think the public hungers, craves these details. And I don't, you know, I know that Metro is probably a little hesitant to go into some of those technical level details, but try us. You know, I think there would be a lot of, you know, a lot of goodwill, quite frankly, that would be generated by a little more sort of forthcoming about how the track work is going along.
Thanks. Joseph?
First, Jim, I want to say, because you're just there, and so I want to say I appreciate all the detail that you gave us, and I want to tell you that I don't hear much complaints about bus service on these days. That is, I'm very disappointed that the rail person is not here, because that is where I hear all of the complaints, and I think this is my thing. I think someone decided that we'll just tell people this is all about safety, and this is all about the accident, and we have to do it, and they'll buy it. And when you were here last time, Mr. Deputy General Manager, I told you then that that patience was going to run out, and I think that that patience has run out. I would like to see that, if possible, I know you've kind of shot down that idea about flexibility on certain days and things like that, but we're not always lifting bridges every time we shut down parts of we're not doing it all the time. If we are, then we have a big problem. So I would like to see maybe if you would go back, at least go back and look at it and see what types of, what do we need to do in order to provide the flexibility that we might need to in order to serve the customers, because the customers have been very patient and tolerant with Metro. And I think at some point we do need to be very patient and flexible for the customers as well. And I'll tell you one quick thing. This one lady told me that on Veterans Day, this is the people that we're talking about here who work on these holidays. These are probably more of the poor, more the lower middle class people who work on these days. Because people like me who have good jobs, we don't work on these days. And so they can least afford these type of things. So this one lady told me on Veterans Day, she was stuck on a train for 2 hours. She was late picking her son up from daycare for 2 hours that day. And because her son goes to daycare, when she's late, she gets charged $15 every 5 minutes. She was 2 hours late. She cannot afford that. And I don't think that that is just the type of story that just applies to her. I think this applies to a lot of people. I think at this time where we are now, Metro has to start to realize that people have been very patient with this work for years. And I think at some point we do need to come up with a better plan to serve them on these days.
Thanks. And so I have a comment. I want to thank you both for delivering your presentation this evening. I, too, find this data fascinating, and it's nice to hear the other side, something that riders don't always hear. My comment is more so, because the train questions were already asked, my comment is more so about the bus, and just maybe I have a suggestion. Could the media department perhaps better push the news outlets to equally announce what's going on with the buses as well as with the trains? When I turn on the morning news, I always hear orange line, yellow line, single tracking, whatever, whatever, whatever. But I don't really hear Metro Bus on Saturday supplemental or whatever else. So I know it's kind of out of your hands, but if you could maybe remind the media department to do that so that the people who take the bus can say, okay, this is what my schedule is going to be like today, because I don't take the train, I take the bus.
We'll be happy to pass that on. And having the bus network in place and in a good state of capacity on days like this, people need also to be plan bidextrous, to borrow a phrase from years ago. If the train isn't working for you, there is parallel bus service in just about every instance. And so, you need to be cognizant of solving your own problem and not just waiting, because with the constraints of not having any track to run on and the frequency of trains is pretty much set by the workload, we're there to augment and supplement, particularly along the red line. We're pretty well set to be able to do that.
Thanks. Carl?
Thanks for coming, gentlemen. I wanted to ask a question that was kind of spurred by Barbara's point. So on Veterans and Columbus Day, you are running the maximum frequency possible. I think that's when we talk about flexibility, I think there's a perception that you could just throw some more trains on and they could still allow you to continue the work being done. Can you dispel that notion or not?
That's just to clarify. We could put out a lot of rail cars. Again, we only have two tracks to work with. Unfortunately, we are not as swift or as mobile as bus operations, where they can pick another street or pick another interlocking. When we operate through this system and you have say, for instance, a railroad where you only have one track. You've got rail cars that are wanting to go through this one defined area. We could run a rail car through that area, okay, if it's several miles or several miles long. It's going to take X amount of minutes to go through that area.
Right.
One thing on our train control system is that there is protection for safe distance. So basically what that is to make sure that the rail cars and stuff don't get too close together because, you know, you don't want to have anything catastrophic take place.
Sure.
So the system itself is going to predetermine a set distance in between those rail cars. It's not like we can really kind of bunch everything up.
Right.
It's going to keep everything separated. So I could run a bunch of rail cars all outbound, say, for instance, through a portal.
Right.
Or on in one direction. But what happens then is that the stack up on the other side of it is that you start having rail cars that are backing up.
Right.
One of the things that is a work with staff and coming here, I'm very sensitive to the fact that I don't like to see it where we have so many trains out there that people are parked underground at tunnels and everything else, because when you have a 1,000-plus people in a rail car, you're parked at grade, you know, you're sitting there, it's not a very, you know, comfortable, you know, feeling. It's not a good position to be in. So one of the things that we look at is that's why we've started running more 8-car trains is, you know, based off of the capacity, the faster that we can move through that area in each direction. That's why a lot of times they'll do one and then they'll try to do another one, a trail, because then they'll slow that other one down.
Right.
So that way then they'll let it speed up so they can develop some type of headway on the other end once we get the customers through there. But
sorry not to interrupt.
No problem.
So on Veterans Day and Columbus Day, you're running the maximum amount that you really can, basically.
Yeah. If we would have added more trains out there, we would have made it worse because we would have just equipment backed up and people just parked in areas, and that's not something that we want to do.
Okay. So that's very helpful to hear. You know, I think I used to be a bus person. Now I'm more of a rail person. I think, you know, having that flexibility is very helpful. Would WMATA be interested or willing to try some sort of pilot in the next month or two, saying instead of single tracking on this section on this day, we're going to run a bus bridge instead that's more frequent? I mean, because I think part of the issue is the single tracking slows down your normal Saturdays, your normal schedule, right, that's operating.
Depending on its location. If we're the outer area of the railroad,
uh-huh.
You know, say, for instance, from King Street down to Franconia Springfield, or we're outside of, it's not fair to use the orange line because we've got so much work for Dulles taking place there, but that right there, it's okay. It's where we get into the core of the system,
mm-hmm.
Especially where we have two lines that are sharing that alignment, that adds to the further complexity. I would say also as we work with bus operations on some of this activity, the other thing that we have to be careful of is that there's only so much service that they can really put out. There's only so many vehicles that they have. And we're also very conscientious of being able to get back ready for Monday morning for the peak service when everything, you know, sometimes our ridership will double or triple compared to what mm-hmm. we see over the weekend. But
and we also have to balance out the cost. And that's something that Mr. Kubitschek has become increasingly aware of recently, is the cost of running a shuttle, because we don't do it cheap. I mean, we do it well. But to move 100,000 people in a weekend takes a lot of buses and a lot of staff and boosts the costs. We did actually, they did a single track on the Red Line through downtown in August a year ago, and we beefed up bus services in that area. And one thing about our riders is they ride by habit, and it's hard to get them to break their habit.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going up and using the bus that was flowing quickly down K Street, they stayed on their train because they were already there. Why not just wait? And so what we saw was there was not a good cost-benefit ratio for trying to provide a supplemental bus when they're running a single track through the area. Now, when it's closed, then, you know, yes, we do beef up everything, and I think we provide that service pretty well.
Well, I guess my question comes back to if if riders are more willing to, if riders would rather see, and I think I would rather see, rather than single tracking, I would rather get off, get on a bus, and get to my destination, rather than endure single tracking. I think that's a question that I think a lot of riders wonder, but I think that's kind of the question that I'm getting at is, at what point do you say, we're single tracking for all this space, let's just shut it down and add buses, but as you mentioned, the cost is a consideration, which we recognize certainly.
So we've got about 2 minutes left for this presentation, and we have five more members that want to ask questions. In no way am I going to shortchange those members that have questions left. So what I'll ask, though, is that, again, keep your questions or your comments to about a minute and 30 seconds, and then we'll try and find someplace else in the agenda to make up some time. Lorraine?
I have maybe a comment more on the rail situation. Is generally, every weekend there is some kind of rail shutdown for whatever, at whatever area there is. On these days that are holidays, that even though they're federal holidays, there are those 4 or 5 days that people in the private sector work. Maybe those weekends, consider them just 2-day weekends as opposed to the 3-day weekends, and operate on a Sunday schedule, but operate regularly as opposed to shutdown. That is my, because if you can shut it down for 2 days and it works fine, the additional day maybe, that is a consideration that should be taken into consideration, that, person is working on President's Day, most likely, as Joseph was saying, most likely those people are hourly wage earners, and if it takes them 2 hours or 3 hours to get to their jobs, that's lost income. So maybe on those days, just leave it as a 2-day weekend instead of a 3-day weekend. That's all.
Thanks. Pat?
Thank you. It was an excellent presentation. I really appreciate it.
Pat, please remember to speak into your mic. Thanks.
Thank you for the presentation. It was excellent. However, I do have two comments. I'd like to piggyback off what Joseph said and Kelsey said. First, Joseph brought up the demographics of those that he classified as the poor, lower hourly income. There are in that demographics as well, there's a group of us that are considered essential personnel, not technically, but we work in academia and the healthcare industry, and we're also required and cannot take off on those four defined minor holidays. And I'd like to know if there is a possibility or if it's feasible to, I don't know what the cost would be, but is it feasible during those four holidays to at least make the AM and the PM rush hour a little more, not the Saturday schedule or Sunday schedule, whatever it is, because we do have to be there. And as Kelsey said, I rely on the bus. My phone was ringing off the hook on Veterans Day with those people that I do talk to, that I bring issues to the table for RAC. The announcement for those of us that ride the bus, there are a lot of people that do not utilize the trains because they really can't afford to, and it's actually cheaper to use the bus for whatever reason. So is there also a way for us to get, as she said, additional announcements out to us?
One of the things, if I could interject right now, if I would really welcome from this board or this committee, if there are some venues that we have not explored as far as communicating to the public, as far as our work outages, our efforts that's taken place, because let me check here. From a customer outreach, this is a typical effort that we go through. There's in-station banners, signs, murals, in-station announcements. There's social media, website postings, Metro alerts, customer service advisories. We have call center recordings. We add personnel at the site, also. There's other, you know, briefings and stuff, news outlets, getting out to the larger media outlets and TV and everything else, radio advertisements, you know, newspaper. There's, if there's something else that we should be doing, I would really welcome that. If there is a way that we should maybe enhance what we're doing since we're utilizing various, you know, media options and stuff, we would definitely be open to that. I think that'd be really great.
Yeah, just one more. I know we're short. Is it possible to put these announcements on the actual buses? Would that be a really would that be very costly? Because a lot of people don't have access to computers. I know that sounds crazy, but because they're using the bus, is that an option?
Well, for the Saturday enhanced schedule, yes, we do put in posters on the buses, and we do audio announcements. All of the list of things that he just read.
Okay, because I oftentimes don't see or hear them on the bus.
You know, one of the challenges with this is we are doing shuttle or some work weekly, so sometimes just the repetitive nature of it, people tone it out until it's too late to notice that, oh, I should have listened to that one. And that's, you know, if you have advice on how to keep it fresh and interesting, so that folks can know that this one you got to pay attention to.
Yeah. Thanks. Chris?
Thank you.
Jim, a question on this weekend's bus bridge on the Red Line. Can you tell us how large it will be and the cost of it?
This weekend, we're running Fort Totten to Forest Glen again, I believe, and we're doing Glenma. Okay, yeah, last weekend was to Forest Glen. There is a we'll probably put out 70 buses at peak, and as far as cost, I don't have that off the top of my head.
Thanks, Candace.
Okay, I just have maybe just a couple of questions and then one comment. I know basically that you said that people should be plan bidextrous? But if you want people to sort of have an alternative, then the best thing to potentially do is in the station actually say, you know, have a list of the buses that they can potentially walk upstairs and take. But if you're just used to taking the Metro, you're not going to know, okay, I can just walk upstairs and take this bus. Like, I take the bus every single day, so I have a better understanding of the buses, but a large number of the people that I work with don't take the bus on a regular basis, so they wouldn't know that, oh, I could just walk upstairs and take this, and it'll get me here in a shorter amount of time. So you have to have a list in the station or a list that accompanies the track work or something like that so that they know that they have other options. Otherwise, they can't make an alternative plan. And then I would also ask, how many more years are we supposed to be doing work on these long weekends? Is it one more year, two more years, three more years? Like, people would like to know that, you know.
Okay. We're in a backlog, naturally. We're looking at a couple of more years of this work. To the level of what we're doing, we're evaluating, for example, what is the best way for us to approach it? We hear a lot of positive comments, for example, about the bus bridging works out nicely because you're between two points, and basically there's bus does a great job in providing the service, and basically the customers, you know, are uninterrupted. The other component, another component, for example, is the type of equipment and stuff that we've bought. I'll share a story just very briefly. The production of what our staff is able to do now compared to what they were doing 3 or 4 years ago, the productivity has, you know, quadrupled in certain areas. We are working towards accelerating that activity, you know, across the board. I will not tell you, you know, that we would ever stop working on this railroad, but what we're going through right now, there should come a point in time over the next few years where you will see it lessen and it'll become much more manageable and much more, you know, streamlined. And then once we get there, then it's something that we definitely want to sustain and not get into this backlog. Because, again, I'll stress it, wide gauge, preventing catastrophic events, dealing with platforms that are crumbling, that are breaking, that y'all are seeing that are put up there and everything else. We've got some pretty big things out there that people that have not been addressed for many, many years. And there's just not an easy way to address that other than doing the work the right way and getting it fixed.
And then just one last comment.
Okay.
Is it better? I know that sometimes, for example, like on, I guess, maybe a weekend, you'll shut down, like, certain parts of the track for those 2 days. Is it possible to maybe on, like, a Veterans Day like we just had, just do it those 2 days and shut it down, or do you need the third day?
Yeah, that's a suggestion that we've also heard. Again, we'll evaluate this. I think, I don't know if y'all have noticed, but you don't see a lot of daytime track work, for example, that's taking place like you did, like, you know, 7 or 8 months ago. One of the things that I'm always looking at, and Jim brought it up, I do try to manage my money. I'm a taxpayer as well. I want to be very frugal, make sure we're spending things in the right way. We were not deploying, and I didn't think that we were getting the right return on investment versus the inconvenience that we were putting our customers through. It just wasn't worth it. Plus, it took a long time for the railroad and everybody to kind of respond as well. So I don't think that you'll see, like, daytime work, you know, during the week for turn back. Now you're starting to see where in some of the areas I might start work at 8 or 9 o'clock a little bit earlier because there is a certain offset of that. And then, again, going into the 2013, maybe on some of the holidays where we know that are a little bit more, definitely we'll look at maybe we do it, you know, 2 days very aggressive, and then maybe where Monday might be a little bit more ridership and stuff, especially if it's in the 500s and everything else. We might look at maybe scaling it down, and maybe we don't do shutdowns. We do a single track, or we do something, you know, vice versa on that. But, again, we work very closely with bus, and we definitely don't want to strain their resources, you know, as they get out there because they serve the region very, very well.
And one of the challenges that, you know, we as schedulers, Shelley included, try and figure out is that trade between ridership and cost effectiveness. And this council could give some input on, would you be willing to trade closing a segment of rail at 8 o'clock on a Friday night to give a bigger window to get that work done in order to have service on Monday? I mean, that's the kind of trades that you have to have, because it takes a certain amount of time to tear out a switch and to put back a switch. And you have to allow enough time to make sure it's done by the time regular weekday service starts. And so we've been debating back and forth. Well, do you wait till the Verizon crowd leaves? You know, that's a big spike. Well, if you do that, then you're really threatening whether you can be ready for a Monday or a Tuesday. So, I mean, there's a trade-off there. Where do you want the inconvenience? It takes this much time to do the work.
Thanks. And last but not least, Deborah.
Both comments and questions. First comments, very good on engineering plans that you talk about. It's very clear, very good. And question is, what about communication for the deaf and hard of hearing? I have brought that up several times before. Is there any way that you can have a think is electronic message board, whatever the state over PA to be putting up on an electronic board for the people who are hearing impaired, especially when you use a Saturday supplemental schedule. Have you thought about that?
I was going to point out that just recently we got new LCD screens on top of each of the kiosks, and as the network evolves, they'll be able to put more information about trains and about bus in the station where people can readily see it.
Yeah, and I know if I could comment as with this, it's still a ways off. For example, the input, whenever the 7000 series rail cars gets here and we start getting those cars here in mass, for those that saw the mock-up and stuff, there are LCD screens inside the rail cars that we do intend to put up notices and information and everything else. So in addition to the list that I went through, you know, beforehand, and that was one of the things on our travels that I've had, is that being able to touch the customer as much as we can in their environment. And as Jim's noted, you know, the screens at the kiosk stations are getting ready to very soon to be activated. That's going to be another, you know, form of information, as well as what we're putting inside of these rail cars. And I think that that will hopefully, you know, add just another layer. But again, I can't stress, there's something else out there that we should be doing. You know, I definitely heard about the 3-day weekends and the focus on the two and lightening up on that. But like I said, the communication aspect, the further that we can refine to get out to everybody, you know, we really would appreciate that feedback.
We really encourage folks, though, to sign up for Metro Alerts.
Yep.
That is the best, most effective way we have to reach mm-hmm. you on a personal level, because you get to identify what it is you want to hear about. I have the privilege of hearing about every bus service delay anywhere in the system all day long. My email box fills quickly. But you can tailor that to just what you need. But that is the most efficient way for us to get not only advance notification, but what's happening and what's changing in real time. And so we strongly encourage folks to utilize that. And it does bridge that gap for everyone that needs it in an alternative format, because it is readily translatable.
Kelsey, can I just, I know we're way out of time, but can I just say, when you brought up about the inauguration coming up, if when you do your 2013 planning, you count that in, that a lot of people, because that now is a holiday, lose a holiday. For instance, my school will not observe Veterans Day because we will be off for inauguration. And so when you start planning for the 2013, figuring out what inauguration day may do to those lower impact holidays.
Well, I can clarify it right now. 2013, the inauguration, I really view it, it's really a 5-day process, because there's a build-up to the event, there's the weekend, and then there's the post-activities. So Friday, peak service. Saturday, we'll have a Saturday-level service, modified just in case there's some events and stuff that are there. Sunday will be the same thing. Monday, there's no work that's taking place. Might not move a million-plus people. Maybe we do, but we do expect a lot of activity that's taking place there. And so we definitely, just for clarification on that, I don't have any track work or anything else scheduled. There's just no way that we could move anybody during that day of time frame.
And so we'll be running a full weekday service to make sure that everybody can get around the region and get access.
So, Mr. Kubitschek and Mr. Hamry, we thank you very much for coming. This has been a great discussion. We appreciate the data that you brought to us. We heard the charges from you about additional communication venues, signing up for the Metro email alerts. And so we'll take some time to think about that and get back to you if we do have, well, I'm sure we will have suggestions. So again, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, so we are about 23 minutes behind on the agenda, but I think we can make up the time a little bit later after this next presentation. So item 6 on the agenda is the Momentum Metro Strategic Plan, and we have Jennifer Green here to speak with us. Welcome, and you have a guest.
Yes. Hi. Tom Harrington, Director of Long Range Planning.
Thanks. Welcome.
Well, thank you all for having us. I know
we're a little short on time, so we'll try to make our presentation brief so we can get to the most important part of our presentation, which is your feedback. Tonight we're here to talk about Metro's strategic plan, Momentum. 35 years ago, the region made a crucial decision between having just roads or having roads and transit. And we're kind of at the same type of crossroads right now, because we have to start planning for the next generation of Metro. We've talked a lot tonight about the current state and some of the things that we have to deal with in our current state, but we have to start planning for the future now, and that's really crucial to get those projects launched. Next slide. So we've talked a little bit about Metro Forward already tonight. It's our $5 billion 6-year investment program. When the system was originally built, it was designed to carry commuters downtown for jobs. The rail system moved about 100,000 people at the time. Today we're moving over 800,000 people. And with the growth the region is expecting, it's not going to do what it's designed to do in the future. And so tonight we're going to talk about getting some of your ideas about how we move the system forward and how it can meet those needs in the future. Okay. And it's important that we not just, what Dave and Jim were talking about were basically things that will help us catch up. We were so far behind with chronic underfunding and chronic disinvestment that the system is where it is today, and we have to address that backlog. Well, with, yeah, and it's super, it's crucial because Metro is the backbone of this region. Economic activity resulting from Metro is critical to our prosperity now and in the future. 2 million, or 54% of the region's jobs, are within a half mile of Metro Bus and Metro Rail. That's pretty, it's a pretty interesting stat. I'm not sure a lot of people knew that. We also move employees of 277 federal agencies. That accounts for about 35% of our rush hour commuters. And in addition to moving people in the region, we also support development, the real estate market. I have some other interesting stats here. Proximity to Metro Rail increases property value by 7 to 9%. $235 billion of property value on our land is derived from Metro Rail. The land generates $3.1 billion annually in property tax revenue. And like I said, property values go up if it's next to Metro. So again, it's the backbone of our region, and that's why it's critically important that we start planning for the future now. So why Momentum? It's because catching up is not enough. We've talked a lot tonight about having to do, you know, three-day track work shutdowns, and that's just to address the backlog. It's not to get us moving forward. It's not to take us into the future to meet our needs. As you know, if you travel through LaFont Plaza on rush hour and a Nats game night, it's super crowded, it's hard to move and get through. We need to address our core capacity today. We need to start thinking about what it's going to take for us to be able to move people through the system, not just today, but 10 years from now, 15 years from now. Our needs are going to be very, very different, and we have to start talking about it now to make that happen. Our buses and our platforms, standing room only, some of our buses, people get on, and they, you know, stations or stops further ahead, people can't even get on the bus today because it's filled at capacity. We're having those issues today. Again, it's really important that we start thinking about beyond today, what's it going to take? And more people are coming to this region. We're expecting a 30% increase in the population. That's like the city of Houston moving here. And it's sobering, the kind of status sobering, considering what we have to work with. We're also looking at a 40% increase in employment. So we need to be ready for these people. We have to, you know, not just take a look at what's going on today, but, you know, think about the system that we need it to be in 10 years and 15 years from now. And as we know, the infrastructure is not going to build itself. There's no funding beyond the Silver Line for expansion. We're doing what we can to meet our current needs, but we have to, again, start moving forward and thinking about what we need to do to kind of meet some of these challenges that are coming. We have a short video that really takes us to where we've been, where we are, and most importantly, where we're going, and why just catching up and addressing the backlog isn't good enough for our region.
Expand the area's highways or invest in a transit system that would connect the district, Maryland, and Virginia. The idea was not without detractors, but after much debate, the region made a pivotal decision to create Metro.
The Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, I want to welcome you to this historic groundbreaking.
March 29th, 1976, Metro's first weekday of service. Open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., the new rail system carried just 19,000 customers between five stations along 4 miles of track. Today, the system has expanded to more than 100 miles of track with 86 stations, carrying nearly 750,000 riders on the rails every weekday. And soon, Metro's newest expansion, Silver Line Dulles Rail Extension, will open and bring with it thousands more riders. And from the rails to the roads, Metro Bus moves another 400,000 customers across the D.C. region every workday. It's a figure expected to grow along with the region itself.
We don't plan it for today. We're going to see a lot more congestion on our roads.
Stations in once considered outlying suburbs have transformed surrounding communities into bustling urban centers. And in the district, stations and bus hubs have brought revitalization and renewal to countless inner-city neighborhoods. In fact, land surrounding Metro stations is responsible for some 2 million jobs, including employees of 277 federal agencies. Metro is committed to moving the region forward. Well into our six-year Metro Forward rebuilding effort, investing some $5 billion in the system to improve safety and make improvements, things like replacing elevators and escalators, adding more rush hour trains, improving cell phone service, introducing introducing new rail cars, buses, and metro access vehicles to our fleet and replacing nearly 60 miles of track.
So we have launched the Metro 4 campaign, which is really about rebuilding the existing system to get it back to where it should be. Well, that's fine, but that's just taking us back to where it should be.
Years ago, maybe a decade.
System. Metro's rush hour platforms are already full. Meantime, buses are often standing room only, and the core of the system through downtown Washington is approaching capacity.
We're only a two-track system. There is no other capacity. And when you build a two-track system at the cost of, say, $12 billion, you can't easily go in and put a new lane in like you can on a highway.
Metro's board of directors and management are charting a new course with a strategic plan. It will be the first for Metro in a decade. To help craft that plan, we are turning to our stakeholders for support. That means Metro wants to hear from you. Our customers, our neighbors, our local business owners. Your voice is key.
Well, I think our relatives are really partners. They are the ones that experience this every day. And so as we plan forward, we need to hear what they think their needs are and how our system can serve them best.
The first step to ensure the system's stability is to squeeze all available capacity from the current core system. That may mean more 8-car trains during the AM and PM rush or bus priority lanes. It means making improvements at key transfer stations to elevators, escalators, and platforms. Other solutions could include construction of pedestrian tunnels or integrating service from other regional transit systems.
People can talk about extensions, they can talk about new stations, everything else, but that all feeds into the core. All those trains, no matter where you're extending them, goes through the core.
Still, the answer to Metro's long-term sustainability reaches beyond the system's core. That's why we're posing a half dozen questions to our customers.
It's essential for the vitality of the region to sustain itself as it is right now, and also to position it for growth.
We're asking you to weigh in on the following. Which priorities support business growth? Which investments deliver improved service to more customers? How do we strengthen the core to enable future expansion? Which communities are in most need of enhanced metro connectivity? How will adequate funding be identified to sustain and grow the system? And when will reliable funding for Metro become a regional priority? As always, the momentum to rebuild, sustain, and grow Metro to support the region requires the support and input from all stakeholders. Join us in defining the next generation of Metro. Our future is riding on it.
Okay. Again, I'm Tom Harrington with Metro's planning office. Quickly touch on a little bit of some of the things that were touched on in the video about where we're headed. But first, we'll take a step back and look at a study that the planning office did last year where we posed a hypothetical, what if there were no Metro? And the reason we asked that question was it's helpful to think about how much Metro has shaped the region today, how many benefits Metro provides as we start to look ahead. And what we found from that analysis, in which we literally, in travel models, removed the transit network and said, what would it look like? We found 1 million more auto trips in the region on the roadways, requiring 1,000 lane miles to be built and all the cost of that. New river crossings. Downtown would be transformed into a big parking lot. And this is not that hypothetical because there are cities around the country. You go out to places that have a lot of development, Minneapolis, Houston, places like that where a lot of downtowns do have a lot of parking. Increased congestion, household costs, and in general, poor air quality and so forth. Maybe the most interesting thing we found was how much the region would be fragmented. The fact that we have Metro today connects Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. Without the transit system, what we found is if you live in Maryland, you would end up working in Maryland. If you live in D.C., you work in D.C., and so forth. So it allows us to sort of connect the region. As the video said, we're at a crossroads and need to make some decisions about the future. So next slide. as we look at sort of future challenges where we're headed, obviously the age of the system we've talked about in terms of the infrastructure. Also, I think the video mentioned heavily the reliance on our core, which is one of the things that works so well about our system, that it really connects everyone downtown. Through transfers, you're able to get anywhere you want to go around the region, but it puts a lot of pressure on a few key stations. Ridership's changing. We talked about growth, but it's also changing its nature. We have a lot of suburban job centers, and really suburban-to-suburban travel is one of those fast-growing markets that is sometimes difficult for us to serve with transit. The costs of Metro go up, as they do in a number of elements of our economy, but in particular, we're very sensitive to labor and energy, labor being things like our healthcare system and our pension, and obviously as one of the largest users of diesel fuel and electricity in the region, those are things that we have to look out to the future in terms of our costs. Planning and serving people with disabilities is a priority for Metro. And as we look at the trends with an aging population, that's going to continue to be an increasing segment of our population that we have to be sensitive to how we can serve them best. And then looking, as the video said, to long-term sustainable funding. We have a short-term issue in terms of federal funding, what's going to happen, you know, in the short term. But really long-term, for the types of investments we're talking about, where is that going to come from? And what if we do nothing? And again, sort of, you know, it's really all the things we talked about in terms of the benefits Metro provides that we would put at risk in terms of safety, more delays, congested highways, sort of reduced overall quality of life. But again, I think it's that competitive advantage. It's our ability to provide the quality of life that the region wants. Recently, the council government's put out Region Forward, which is this vision for the region that really says, what if we focus development into walkable centers, and really transit is a key component of everything that they've talked about. So now what we want to do is talk about some of the potential opportunity solutions that are out there to sort of address these challenges. Over the past year, our board has been discussing the development of a strategic plan, Momentum, and one of the things they did was, and I think you've all been briefed on this before, was develop a mission and vision statement, as well as 4 strategic goals. These are shown here, the first being building and maintaining a premier safety culture and system. Second, meeting or exceeding customer expectations by consistently delivering quality service. Third, improving regional mobility and connecting communities. And the fourth being ensuring financial stability, investing in our people and assets. So part of what we're doing is looking at what are those short-term actions that we can take to address, sort of achieve these goals, but is also looking at longer term, both actions, investments that will get us there. So some of those long term actions to give you a flavor for things that we're looking at. First, as the video said, we want to maximize the system we have. And on the rail side, that's going to mean running longer trains. So all the platforms are built to handle 8-car trains. We're starting to run them in the peak hour, but really to maximize the system, we could run longer trains. However, that's not just buying rail cars, it's also power upgrades, maintenance facilities, and so forth to be able to run the longer trains. If we're going to run longer trains and have more people in the system, obviously addressing some of the station crowding issues is going to require extended mezzanines, more stairs and escalators. We also, in terms of underground pedestrian links, know there are a few places in the system where if we could connect stations, in particular between the Farragut stations, between Metro Center and Gallery Place, it would help relieve some of the most crowded transfer points. But rail is not the only way to get around downtown, and obviously with a surface transit network that really focuses on a few major corridors through downtown, we're really looking right now for dedicated bus lanes in a few key corridors. We think that's going to help both supplement and carry some of the growth through downtown and make the system more efficient. But ultimately, if we want to add a lot of capacity, it's not just building on what we have, and so we're also looking at new rail connections. One of the ideas is allowing, with these connections between lines, it's to allow trains to go in different sort of paths than they can make today. So being able to take a right turn from Courthouse to Arlington Cemetery would allow us, and then potentially going over the Yellow Line Bridge, allow us to bring trains into downtown sort of in different ways, but maybe more importantly, It would allow us to have some service in Virginia that doesn't cross the river. It would also help sort of serve different areas. Ultimately, adding new tunnels will give the biggest bang, you know, in terms of bringing in capacity. Right now, it's where the lines are shared, the yellow and the green. Orange and blue is where we have our choke points. So separating those lines is where we get the biggest increase in capacity. In terms of the connecting communities, we see, you know, surface transit is continuing to be an area where we can do more. Right now we have Metrorail and Metrobus, but really there are a lot of new modes being developed across the region. Streetcar is being looked at in the district as well as in Arlington, Columbia Pike. And the Purple Line is a light rail facility that's under development. But these projects are being developed independently right now. And so what we're looking at is what are the regional trips people will be making, where they're missing connections, how can we use Smart Trip and information to make it a more seamless trip across the region. And ultimately, in addition to serving that core of the system, we're looking at where are the new markets, the new connections that are needed. Should we extend the reach of the system? And it doesn't necessarily mean just Metrorail extensions because, you know, we could take advantage of the region's HOV and hot lanes and use Express Bus to serve some of these new growing areas. So those are the, to give you a flavor of the types of projects that we're exploring, those are all things we're considering. So now we'd like to hear from you and just kind of to run through again some of the key questions that we're asking. First, what do ideal bus and rail rides look like? And I think posing this as, you know, today, but also really in the future, what would your ideal ride look like? And then second, which communities are most in need of enhanced metro connectivity, sort of new new connections? And then finally, the questions about funding in terms of how will we find the funding and sort of what forms should we look at? What would be the most fair ways to sort of approach the funding needs to achieve the vision? So I think why don't we stop at this point and start our discussion. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for your presentation. Again, I'm going to ask the RAC members if you have a question to raise your name tag. Okay, so I can gauge how much interest we have on this topic. Okay, any members of the public? We have one member. Okay, Chris, come forward, please.
Keep it brief. Thanks for the presentation. Communicating, rebuilding, communicating service changes, and asking for input on the future of Metro is vital. And I applaud Metro for taking steps to attempt to do that. And I want to provide a little bit of feedback from what I've seen. Metro Ford got off to a great start and has flatlined. You look around stations, you have Metro Ford billboards or whatever you want to call them, the posters, some of them aren't to date, they mentioned months past. It's not being kept up. There's a Metro Ford Twitter account that tweets maybe once a quarter, and that's supposed to be an ongoing conversation. So the Metro Ford ball has kind of been dropped. Rush Plus was a huge disaster as far as communicating that with riders. It should not have been called Rush Plus to begin with. It was a service change, and it should have been communicated to riders that it was a service change. Now, with Momentum, I understand the concept you're going for, but you really haven't got the buy-in from everyone who's involved. Have you sat down with anyone from the community and said, hey, we're going to roll out a product like Momentum. We're going to be asking these questions. What do you think? How should the product look? Instead, you've got folks like myself and Unstuck DC Metro bashing it because it's a company in Nebraska. You know, it's something that got rolled out. It got rolled out sloppy, and now you're looking for buy-in from us or from the RAC. And all three of these things are very confusing. Again, I applaud you for taking those steps, but I think there just needs to be a little cleanup and housekeeping to continue those steps. Thank you.
Thanks. We're going to start with Deborah and go around the table that way. So, Deb.
I think that was a great idea to look at for ways to improve the community. But my question is, how will you communicate with the public on improving the way to move the metro forward? How will you communicate? Do we need more public hearing? Do we need more outreach?
Sure, great question. And to your point also, we've been out, we launched Momentum at the end of September, and to date, I think we've been in front of at least 25 groups over about 500 people so far talking about this. And it's a similar presentation, similar questions, but we've tailored it a little bit depending on the group. So we've talked to community groups, we've talked to public officials, we've talked to planning departments, we've talked to citizens advisory groups, and the conversation continues. It's certainly not the end. We're still gathering the input. A lot of priorities out there. A lot of different groups have different priorities. So what we're trying to do is compile all that input, compile all the feedback. We have Mind Mixers, one of the tools that we're using, the crowdsourcing online. We're also, again, doing the community presentations. We're in front of groups like this, like you guys. You know, tell us what the ideal ride should look like in the future. You know, we talked a lot about what happens today, but, you know, as you heard, we have a lot of needs to meet, and we talk about this a lot. There are a lot of needs out there, a lot of priorities that have to be met. And so, you know, at the culmination of this, what we'd like to have is the product, is the strategic plan that says, how do we get there? We know what our priorities will be, because we'll be talking to groups, we'll be talking to the public, our customers, people who don't even ride Metro. What's important to the region? You know, once we can synthesize that information, we take that back, that product back out and say, this is the roadmap that we have developed based on the input. You know, do we hear you correctly? So it's definitely an ongoing conversation. And again, we're at the input gathering stage, so we can put these things together, create that roadmap, and then get buy-in. That's you know, what we want to do, and because we do need that roadmap. That's, you know, we talk a lot about what the needs are, but then, you know, the important question is, how do we get there? What do we have to do to make this happen, to make this a reality?
Okay. Candace?
I just have a quick question, I think. So how does this program sort of go together with basically certain offices like rail operations, bus planning, things like that? Like, I'm trying to, I guess, in my head sort of connect them and see how everything's going to work together. I know that you say that you need more information, but, for example, I've been here for maybe 6 months now, and we get presentations almost every week from different committees, different surveys, different things saying we've done these surveys, we've gathered this information. Are you going to be using the information that's been gathered, or are we going to start new surveys and new this and spend the money on surveys versus spending the money on actually doing the work? And so my question is, how does this program then work in conjunction with the people, for example, that came in and talked about holiday service levels tonight? Like, how is everything sort of going to mesh together so that we're not wasting, how much money is it, $5 billion over the next 6 years?
Sure. In addition to reaching sort of outside the building, there's definitely the internal component of talking to each department, making sure our employees have a chance, you know, to participate and then give ideas. We're certainly trying to use as much available data as possible in terms of today's performance. There have been, and there is a survey, so we are adding new sort of data collection, but I think the questions that are being asked are different from the types of surveys we do just to monitor sort of how we're doing today. These are questions about where do we need to go in the future, so it's a little bit different purpose. But, you know, I think we definitely want to look at where we are today and sort of build from that, and I think the biggest issue, kind of getting at your point about the Metro Forward, is you know, Metro Forward is an enormous challenge on its own right, sort of bringing the system to sort of reliable state of good repair. We recognize that we have to start from that before you can do anything with expanding capacity. In other words, if we're not, you know, putting out as many buses and rail cars as we can today, then we can't even really talk about adding more, you know. So that's sort of what we're building on with this conversation.
Thanks. We've got about 6 minutes, you all. Chris?
Thank you. I want to ask about funding. I think part of the long-range funding is answered in the slide about where would the region be without transit. And I think the success of Take Our Daughters to Work is the model for the people in this region are transit by choice. They own cars. I think we need a Take Our Cars to Work day. Motorists here want everybody but them to take transit. Even in this time of the tax code under scrutiny, we're subsidizing parking more than we are transit. There's just a disequilibrium that just befuddles me. I know our congressional delegation is well aware of this, but we're not making much progress in the on the current Congress. Thank you.
Thanks. Carl?
Thank you both for coming in. I think that looking at your questions, I think finding a blue line solution needs to be a top priority. I think we were talking about this, Barbara and I, before the meeting about the changes that were discussed at the board meeting, I think last week or maybe even this morning, regarding as silver line comes on, blue and orange line is going to be further impacted. I think that as those impacts happen, Metro really needs to have a solution that works for people that have chosen to locate around those lines based on the assumption that, you know, transit service is reliable and useful. So I think from a capital projects, from a strategic plan, you know, look, you know, some people would probably say should have been a discussion happening earlier than right now. Let's leaving all that behind, I think that moving forward, finding a solution on blue and orange, especially getting under the river, especially as, you know, ridership will begin building on the Silver Line, is has to be one of the top priorities, more so in my opinion than, you know, pushing out further beyond the end of the lines. Obviously, that includes under the river access or over the river access or something like that. But that's my two cents.
Yeah. And I'll just say thanks for your presentation. As far as which communities are most in need of enhanced metro connectivity, I'm definitely going to say, being a D.C. resident, those communities that are on the outer edges of Washington, D.C., like, you know, wards 5, 7, and 8, because usually those centers don't have metro stations, and so there are already people that are on buses. And so I think you don't have that stigma like you might have in other parts of the region where people don't want to get on a bus. They want to get on a bus. They just want to get on a really fast bus that can get them there quickly. And so I think that if you work with some other government agencies and maybe if you integrate it with the private sector and economic development projects, you know, like I'm thinking I could see a BRT from Capitol Heights Metro down to Congress Heights Station. You've got what's going to be what maybe a new Walmart connecting to what's going to be a St. Elizabeth campus and a technology center. So I see that going on. So I think Metro has to really work hard with all of the appropriate partners to work on a BRT system and also to work on a ferry system. I know there was some talk, I think, with the Navy Yard of having that. I think we're going to have to get serious that we know we might not be able to build under a river, but we can have boats that will get people from major travel or tourist destination centers to another job center. I like the underground pedestrian links. The reason I like that is for some reason it reminds me of makes me think about Montreal, where I think Metro is just saying, well, we can link people to stations, but I look at it as we can link people to jobs underground, and there's a whole other city maybe we can build underground that the private sector might be more willing to do because they see an economic incentive to do so, as Metro sees an incentive to connect certain stations underground. So I'll leave it at that. James?
Yeah. First of all, I think thank you for your work. I had a question for you. When I came here about 25 years ago, the push was for suburbanization. Downtown D.C. was a wasteland. Now it looks like downtown D.C. has picked up in terms of being the destination for people. My question is, number one, is your work based on downtown D.C. being the central destination for the Washington, D.C. region? Number two, I'm one of these people who believes in this thing called regionalism. You know, we just can't look at Washington, D.C. as just the city itself. What discussions have been had? I mean, we know about Silver Line, about expanding to Charles County, Frederick County, maybe further down in Virginia, and such as Prince William and Spotsylvania, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, in terms of the forecasting we do, we do use the region's, you know, cooperative land use forecast about where jobs and housing are going to locate, and they certainly do have, you know, reflect a lot of the growth in the D.C. core, you know, in downtown, as well as in Arlington. I think, you know, a point we want to make is the outer suburbs, the inner suburbs are all growing a lot as well. What we're really looking at, though, is what are the areas that we can get the highest transit use, you know, the share of people riding transit, and clearly it's highest the closer in you are to the center of the region. And it's going to be a balance. I think you mentioned Charles County and some of those. Those are tremendous markets because we have such long-distance work trips in this region. We're going to carry a lot of folks, you know, coming in for jobs. And what we want to look at is sort of what's the most cost-effective transit mode. You know, is it a bus solution or a rail solution? Those are types of things we're looking at. So we are looking at extensions. We're looking at focusing in the center of the region as well. And I think what we're trying to figure out is what's the right balance between sort of expanding out and investing in the center. Thanks.
Thanks. Joseph, Ben, and then Victoria.
I'm going to be brief because I just don't think – I'm not even going to try to answer those questions. I just don't think I can give you them right now. But I do want to thank you for your presentation, and I do want to tell you that I really like the idea of the underground pedestrian links. I just really like that idea, so you should definitely put it in there. But what I did want to ask you about is this is what I – because I mentioned this last month – every month we seem to have these type of presentations and you guys want answers like this, and then you're going to do these things with the public and you want them to come out for different things and respond to things that you guys have going on. And I think that is just not – that is a segmented way to address the public and ask them how to respond to things. So I have two quick questions. One, what is the timeline on the end of this information gathering that you need?
We are looking to have a draft by January. Of the strategic plan.
Okay. But I'm sorry. I just want to keep moving because I want them to get their time. But I think that is just not. I hope that there will be more opportunity after January. The second thing that I wanted to mention is that so we just did this information about buses. We just did this, about bus feedback, about changes to bus service, and now we want public input about momentum, and pretty soon we're going to be like, it's the budget time. So we want public input about the budget, and then we go out with these different hearings, and the turnout is not so good. So then we say, turnout isn't that good. So we did these type of things. I'm going to renew my request that Metro take a big picture look at what type of public information that it wants, and then plan regional summits or regional conferences and get where you are asking people to give you feedback on all of a range of different things that Metro wants at one time. So, and it doesn't all have to be like stand before a PowerPoint and do it that way, but there can be breakout sessions and things like that. Similar to, I'm going to take this from Victoria, I forget her last name, but the Ward 7 transportation Veronica, not Victoria, similar to what they do over there, because I think that you can then push a critical mass of people who are interested in feedback to Metro and get their feedback about different things at the same time. It's just so segmented in how Metro wants to engage with the public that sometimes it's frustrating to the public.
So like a Metro Summit or a Metro Fair where maybe different rooms are showcasing different aspects of whatever you want the public's input on.
Okay.
Good suggestion. Ben and then Victoria.
Yeah, thanks. Real quickly, I think one thing that I'd like to have put into this is building a little more flexibility into the existing system, and more specifically things like pocket tracks, which seem to be a pretty small investment in terms of actual length of a rail, but it has a huge impact in terms of flexibility and resiliency. That's a nice DHS word there, of the system. Another thing, when you're talking about core capacity, I see that as sort of a synonym for core capacity for commuters. But as a person who lives just outside of that core, I think Metro has a role to play in both expanding the idea of what the core of DC really is, but also enhancing transportation within the sort of semi-core area there. And I think a lot of it has to do with existing stations, but just creating links between some of those existing stations. Mm-hmm. I've said all along, I think Metro needs a circle line. That's the one thing that would enhance that kind of thing. That's not just about commuters, it's about people who are just outside of that commute area. the last thing I want to say is I think Metro, through this campaign, should do a much better job of leveraging the ridership that it has in terms of political support. And I think we've seen that in past budget negotiations, because who contributes the most to Metro's budget? It's the jurisdictions. And who are the jurisdictions composed of? They're composed of Metro riders. But Metro has done a really poor job, I think, in terms of getting the word out to riders that they need to contact their jurisdictions to get more support for Metro. In other words, if you want Metro to be better, you're going to have to make a phone call. And, you know, the phone call goes to this person or that person. Metro has incredible power, you know, incredible visibility into these people's lives that it's not using, and that really frustrates me.
Thanks, Veronica. I mean, Victoria. Oh, gosh.
Thank you. Everyone had great questions. I think they covered most of my concerns. I just had a question when I was watching the video. It was an excellent video. But then at the end, I see the questions, and then I don't know where to go from there. If this video is going to be on the website, I wouldn't know who to contact or anything. I was like, oh, great questions. I'll think about them. And then it ends. I understand if you're using it in a group setting, but otherwise, I didn't know what you wanted me to do.
Sawi, can you see the next slide for me? Perfect segue. Thank you. This is our Momentum webpage. The video is featured on there. And if you, this is the top of the page. If you scroll down through some of the information, we have brochures on there. There's also a button that says Join the Conversation, and that's the Mind Mixer, where we post questions on a regular basis. We do some live polling. And that's where we can, that's one of the tools that we're using to get the input from that particular, you know, from the video side. We post on the website, we direct you to Mind Mixer.
But when I watch
more interactive.
The video on there, I'm going to know where to go to provide my input.
The video is online, so the information around the link of the video will be available on the website. So yes, once you watch the video, it'll close and come back to the page, and there's a button that says Join the Conversation, and that's where you give your input. That makes sense? Did I answer your question?
Yeah, Pat, did you have a comment?
Yes.
Okay, can you be real quick, please?
I apologize for that. Thank you, as always. You do excellent with your presentations. Thank you as well, Mr. Harrington. I'm here because you have a strategic plan for the future. I'm concerned about those citizens on the east of the river. I have not done an individual survey, but the main concern that I hear is because these kids rely on public transportation, and so getting there, there are parents that have to take them there. It is a sad thing to see them have to stand up from the beginning to the end and have to wait so long for the transportation. It's not that they will not provide, you know, pay their way, but something needs to be done. They need to be serviced just as well as those people up in Friendship Heights and Chevy Chase. And it sickens me when you've got all these babies on the bus that have to be to school, sometimes because of the charter schools, as early as 7:15 and do not get home until 7 at night, and they're relying on this public transportation. I don't know what can be done, but this group must be included in your strategic plan. I don't know how you're going to do it, and anything that I can do to help you get there, I am willing to do it pro bono, whatever needs to be done to get some people together. But we need to think about these people that the East of the River public charter schools are growing, and they need to be included in this demographics.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Pat. And I'm going to make one more plug at the ongoing dialogue. Next Friday, December 14th, the Washington Post is hosting a live forum called Conquering the Commute, where we're going to be talking a lot about the strategic plan and the direction of Metro for the future. They're going to live stream that. I believe that starts around 8:30. Yeah, 8:30. And yes, so I encourage you all to, if you cannot attend, at least you know, join us online, spread the word. I know that the Washington Post has its extensive reach, but anything that you all can do to help us get the word out, to get people tuned in who may not have been invited to the forum, we would certainly appreciate you guys passing that information along, again, to expand the dialogue and to make sure that we're including everyone who wants to be included.
Will do. Ms. Green, Mr. Harrington, thank you so much for coming tonight. So we've got about five more items left on the agenda. I am confident we can do it in 20 minutes.
So for those of you, I understand some of you have to leave at 8:30. For those of you that can stay until 8:45, I would appreciate it. We're not taking a vote on anything, but I think you do want to be a part of the discussion for the next few items. So next up, we have RAC meeting efficiency and structure. Carl, I'm going to ask you to limit this to 10 minutes or maybe 7 even if you can.
I circulated a working group of Ben, Barbara, Carol, Frank, myself, and Joseph met and have communicated over the past month, looking at identifying some of the problems that we've had at the RAC over the past few years and seeing if we can address those and become a more efficient body that is more responsive and has more time to address issues of relevance, tonight being an excellent example with two important presentations and other topics that weren't covered and were nearly out of time. We circulated this document that is agenda item 7 in your packets that identifies the constraints of what we felt the constraints of the current monthly meeting structure are and a possible proposed solution, which would transition this body to something that is more similar to how the AAC works, with 3 meetings a month, with members attending 2 of them. The additional meeting you would attend would be some sort of subcommittee topics to be decided, some sort of standing subcommittee that where we would do more policy development and staff presentations, that sort of thing. Obviously, those meetings would, of course, be open to the public and have the existing public, input and involvement as normal RAC meetings. I guess, really, we're more just looking to get feedback from folks in person. The leadership team is meeting with the board of directors on December 20th, I believe, and we're hoping it would be helpful if the RAC does want to look at changes, if we could go into that meeting maybe not with a final decision, but some sort of guidance or structure so we could discuss with the board if they have any suggestions. If this is not something people want to pursue, then certainly we won't pursue it. But from my perspective, having been on the RAC for 4 years, I guess now, or 3 years, hard to remember how many. They pass so quickly. I do think that there are ways we can be more productive, and I do recognize would have an additional time commitment from folks. I'm very busy myself, but I do think that the system certainly deserves the time and additional attention. So I guess I just throw it open to comments, and if there aren't any negative comments, I might put a motion on the floor to adopt this recommendation as a sense of the body.
I'm definitely open to it, committing to additional time, because we don't have enough time to get most of the things we'd like to do done, and we all have great ideas. And I do agree that the only way we're going to go forward is to step outside of what the bylaws has asked us to do. I don't know how we're going to do it. Most of us have full-time schedules. However, I would be willing to commit. The only thing that I would need are the days and times, because I am a graduate student. I am a full-time employee. But I would be willing to, do what needs to be done, because we're tasked. We have a big job on our backs, and we just can't do it in one day in a month. Mm-hmm. We can't. And it looks like it will be a volunteer thing on our part, but I'm willing to commit to that. If you could give me days and times, if there would be some flexibility, since these are standing subcommittees, mm-hmm. That's an option I think that could be put to the table. Excellent, excellent ideas from all of you.
Thanks. Candace?
Can I address something there?
Okay, Carl.
One of the things we discussed was making sure that the subcommittees are on designated days or times so that people can plan around them. So it's not every meeting we're saying who's available on the, in 2 weeks, so that people can plan. I mean, I suppose we're also, we would be open to having subcommittee meetings like one on Tuesday, one on Thursday in the same week or something, so that it could work with, that's all we can discuss and figure that out. I think that's open.
Candace, and then Joseph.
Okay, I guess I have two quick questions. So would each subcommittee have a member from each jurisdiction? Is that how they'll be formed? Is that what's going to happen?
We didn't specifically discuss composition. I think that having some sort of jurisdictional balance, maybe with three members from each jurisdiction and that large people split or something, would make some sense. I think part of it depends on how we break the subcommittees up. If it was a standing subcommittee, I mean, you could do it. We kind of discussed two different modes, and feel free to jump in, folks that were around the table when we discussed this, but we had discussed two different ways. You could either do it kind of from a modal perspective, which is how the AAC does it, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So rail and then bus and then maybe a third one or something like that. Or you could do it based around topics. So, you know, subcommittee A would have safety and long-term planning, and subcommittee B would have customer service and operations or something like that. And then designated things would go depending on those jurisdictions. I mean, that's all open to feedback.
4 minutes, Joseph? And then, I'm sorry, Candace, I thought you were done.
No, and then I guess my question is, because we already do working groups, so is this similar to working groups? I'm trying to figure out the distinction in my head why we're sort of doing this. Like, basically, when there's a specific topic, people have been volunteering to be part of that working group. So I guess I'm trying to figure out.
I think this is more formal than the working groups. It would be established right now. If we need to have an airport working group meeting, we just schedule it based on time, and you know it happens. This would be a standing date that we could well publicize that would allow for more coverage. And I think part of the goal would be to move some of the kind of nuts and bolts discussions into the subcommittee days. And then the subcommittees would be able to pass recommendations up to the full RAC. So, you know, if there are specific things that are being discussed, really, or recommendations that, you know, Jim Hamry wants, whatever that falls into, whichever subcommittee is taking that could hear his presentation. Obviously, would be open to anyone to come, but that subcommittee would take it up, deal with the issues, pass up the recommendations to the full body to take up in kind of more of a general body meeting.
And this affects our attendance, though. I see that you've attached our attendance policy here, so that's going to affect people in attendance. So they would be then required to attend at least two meetings in the month, and then that if they don't attend those meetings, then, for example, it says here, if has attended no regular meetings for three consecutive months or has missed two-thirds of regular meetings within a six-month period. So is that saying that basically now we're looking at two meetings versus the one meeting per month? Is my understanding correct?
We would be. The bylaws are written so that to protect folks who came on based on a certain time commitment.
Okay.
If we go to two meetings a month and you only come to the one meeting a month that you've been coming to, so you attend three meetings out of six, you don't hit the threshold because you will have attended regular meetings for three consecutive months, and you have also not missed two-thirds. You've only missed half. So even if you only come to what you come to now, you'd still be protected.
So then that means you can't miss what you come to now. You can't miss any of those.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'd have to do the math. I assume that that's the case, though. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Joseph?
So I was just thinking about a number of different things. I will tell you that when we met and we talked about this, I think I have some of the concerns that Candace has, but I think that you have, Candace. But I think that this is probably the best way to go, because if we look at the meeting that we had tonight, like the presentation that last Jennifer and I forgot his name had tonight, there's just no time to respond to that type of presentation after you have a long presentation before that. And I don't think that we're doing the service that we wanted to come here to do. It took us 4 months to approve a youth town hall and things like that. I just don't think we're doing a good a good service on that, and I want to be respectful of what other people's times are as well. That being said, I did want to talk, Candace, a little bit to your point about the working groups. I don't know that this proposal would necessarily get rid of all the working groups. It would just probably give – there are two problems we have in our working groups. One, they're badly attended, so recommendations that come out of the working groups have to then be convinced by an overwhelming majority of members who were not at the working group.
And revisited.
And revisited and discussed and debated and everything like that. And basically you're just reworking the working group here at the general meeting. And what we do with the subcommittees is that because the subcommittees have these larger numbers on there, hopefully a lot of that work can be done at the subcommittee level, and then we can just have broad conversations about that work. The last thing that I will say, we have been here a long time. The last thing that I will say is that I also think that, and I was Patrick was saying here that they do this at the ANC, is that some of those working groups, so like the airport working group that Ben is leading, may end up falling under a subcommittee. So it can still exist. It will just fall under a subcommittee who will feed that information through this subcommittee and come back to the full council. So that's pretty much I have these hesitations as well, but I do think that this is probably the best next – like, we've done a lot of good things this year, and I think that this is a good next thing that we can continue to do.
Okay. So I'm going to have Chris speak next, and then, Carl, you're going to have to decide if you want to continue the discussion at another time or put a motion on the floor or whatever. But, Chris.
As a departing member, Carl, try and tap into those of us that want to stay kind of peripherally attached to the RAC.
Absolutely. And you can always come and we'll look for you in the audience. Are there any public comments real fast?
Yeah, Carl, I'll be really brief, but I'm just perplexed, and Candace sort of spoke to this. I mean, up until, I guess, about a year ago with the previous class of RAC members, and some of you are still here, the RAC had some standing committees, and they met on a more or less monthly basis, and they kind of fell apart, and they never really did their job properly to begin with. But I just want to make sure we're not either A, regressing, or B, forgetting our history. I mean, David Alpert did run the Long-Term Project Committee, and it was more or less effective. I mean, it actually did what you're aspiring to do, and that's ground we've been over before. So I just want to sort of, you know, put that on the table and ask, how does this differ from that, particularly with respect to public participation? Those were always run, and even the Airport Bus Working Group was run as an open roundtable versus imposing a more restrictive public comment policy, you know, as you're proposing to do now. So I just want to see, are we regressing or?
What we used to have, I would put under what we used to have. For the folks who weren't here, we used to have, like, every January we'd convene the budget committee. The budget committee would meet 5 or 6 times over the course of the spring, develop the recommendations, pass them up, then it would disband. I think that we formalized that process in the working group structure when we revisited the bylaws, and the subcommittee meetings that did occur were never something that was standing and regular. It was very ad hoc as needed. Now, that does serve a purpose, I think, as we've seen with the airport thing. You wouldn't want to have an airport meeting every month. Maybe Ben does. So I definitely hear your point. This would be more formal. As to public participation, maybe we'd revisit some of that at some point, but we have a system where you can provide input, as you just did now. It would probably be the similar, at least for the start.
I just want to remind everyone we're over time. I see a public comment.
I want you to sit down.
Then after you, it's Pat.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to ask, have you guys considered doing basically a mirror of what the board does and have a safety, finance, customer service mirror their committees and follow their bylaws? It might help you to get that passed through the board as well.
We did talk about that as a topical structure. I think there are some board things obviously deserve less RAC attention, obviously. From a topical perspective, I think Pat.
Pat, 30 yeah. seconds, please.
Okay, yes. I would say one of the differences or one of the additions that we have at our subcommittee level are work plans. So each subcommittee has 5-6 things that they're going to deliver throughout the year. and those are deliverables which go to the full committee. So I think the idea of work plans and deliverables are key at the subcommittee level, which might be a little bit different than what we did before.
With the understanding that that we do need to figure out the timing piece and the topics, I'm going to put a motion on the table to move us forward with establishing a second monthly meeting, second and third, with members attending one or the other, that would be used for subcommittees, and start the discussion on topics and membership of those subcommittees over the next month. That's my motion.
I second the motion.
Okay. So did everyone hear the motion? We're going to now take a vote quickly. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Got one. And is anyone going to abstain from the vote? No. Okay. So it looks like that motion passes. Carl, will you do me a favor? We discussed this quickly. Will you send an email out as a recap to everyone later on this week or next week?
Yes. And it would be helpful.
Identifying the particulars.
And it would be helpful if people gave thought to how we structure topics.
Okay. Great. Next agenda item, give me 5 minutes, please, just for the rest of the meeting agenda here. The 2012 recap, you all have this as agenda item 8 in your packet, page 47 to 52. I just want to thank everyone for the hard work that they've done this year and all the contributions that they made. We have gotten a lot done. We certainly have a lot more to do. Things didn't happen as fast as we wanted them to. Things didn't happen as easily as we may have thought that they should have happened, but they did happen. And so I asked John to put this together so that we would have an easy document to go back to say, well, what did we discuss and what did we accomplish? So this RAC 2012 overview will be shared with the board and others that are interested, that want to see it over the next month or so. If you have any additions, any comments, any edits, please let John know so he can incorporate those. Yes, Frank.
I just want to add that I think this is an incredibly impressive list and want to thank our chair for her year of service and the leadership team, because I think we've done more this year than we have in many years past. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kelsey, can I just ask John, I know that you want to put this in the packet to the board before their meeting, so what is the cutoff that you...
Thursday.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Seeing no other comments, are there any questions or comments on the RAC chair and the AAC chair reports? No. Great. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not really about the report, though, right. But it is about the board. I thought we were expecting a response from the board on communications.
We asked for a response. I have not received anything. Are we going
yes,
to discuss
we
that?
Had a response, so
oh, we did?
A response ready to go. And
oh. Okay, and then as soon as the leadership team gets that response, we'll definitely pass that on to you all. January meeting scheduling, I want to remind everyone that the RAC will not meet that first Wednesday of January due to the... Oh, we have to take a vote on that. Okay.
I move.
I didn't understand that.
I move it.
Okay, so...
Say what you move.
Say, yeah, say the motion.
I move that we move our January meeting from January 2nd to the following January, which is January...
Nice.
The following Wednesday, which is January...
2013.
Yes.
9,
January 9th, 2013.
Second.
Great. Let's take a vote. All in favor? All right. Any opposed? Any abstention? Oh. Yes. And that's what was going to be my next topic. So, John, we've taken a vote. January 9th is fine.
Did anybody, Chris, did you abstain? Okay.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Okay. Just making sure.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. There will be elections in January 2013. For those that are new to the RAC, normally how the process works is over the next few weeks, the next month, feel free to, I would say, first talk to your jurisdictional counterparts, get an idea for who wants to run as Maryland vice chair or DC vice chair or Virginia vice chair, as well as who wants to run as the chair of the RAC. And then I would, I think what we've normally done is maybe just put out a short blurb as to your interest and why you want to run. And then elections are held in January, correct?
In January.
John, am I missing anything?
No, we will be getting new members on the RAC. The board will make appointments on the 20th, so as soon as the board makes its appointments, I will share their names and contact information with all of you, and share your names and contact information with all of them, so you can reach out to them.
So, well. Exactly.
We'll be getting a lot of new members, with four people stepping down and several vacancies and all that.
Okay, great. Next on the agenda is open. Oh, did you have a question? Next on the agenda is open mic community meetings. I only have one announcement. I wanted to thank those of us that showed up on Monday to the W6-W8 bus service cut meeting that was organized by Councilmember Bowser. Joseph Kitchen attended, as well as Carol and I. So I just wanted to mention that was another way where riders were, the RAC was out in force listening to members of the riding public. Ben?
I also attended the Mobility Labs Transit Screen Hack Day. This was a couple weeks ago. I made my own transit screen. It is awesome. I use it all the time now. If anyone wants to set up a transit screen, you should talk to Kurt or you should talk to me about it. You can basically, you know, the little things in the metro where it says what time the train's running, you can set that up for yourself on your desktop. And it also has bus arrival information and Capital Bike Share information about bikes that are here and there and docks that are open, all that kind of stuff. If you live in a neighborhood like I do where the transit options don't all run through the same stop but are sort of scattered, it's amazing, wonderful, life-changing. The other thing I'll quickly mention is I sent around the report of the Airport Advisory Group's conclusions. I know it's long, a big 10 pages. Take a look at it. It will be on the agenda for the January meeting. Thanks.
Okay. Barbara?
I attended the one of the hearings, the bus hearings, that was rescheduled because of the storm and in Falls Church, and it had twice as many as Shirlington, which means like 12 instead of 6. And but it was, there were some really good things that were brought there, and I was really impressed with the Metro staff and the bus people that, and they really listen and they really care, and it was just so obvious. And because there's a, some social services building has been relocated and it's no longer accessible to all the people that need it by bus, and so there were some real issues that there was a group there to talk about. I haven't figured out yet if it's good news that everybody's so happy with the bus changes that they don't want to come, or if they just, in spite of lots of ways of trying to, you know, let people know, people just don't know and don't come, because I think some people do care, but the people who came, I think, had a good time.
Good. Thanks, Barbara. Pat?
This is a really important comment, and I hope that all of you hear this. I haven't been here long. I was very upset when I got my email that you would not be with us next year, Kelsey. And for the short time I've been here, I must say it has been a pleasure. I am honored to serve under your leadership. I just wish you would have extended or might would consider extending it. But even if you don't, wherever you go, you will be an exception to the rule. And I have to say thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat. I'll just say thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to lead you all. This has been a very good group to work with. We don't always agree, but we can usually always come together to work on behalf of the riders.
And I think we also deserve applause for Chris and Victoria, who are leaving us, and Ron, who is not here, for their years of service, many nights of attendance and help, and we do hope you stay in touch and can add to the ever-swelling ranks of public who attend.
And so with that, if there are no other comments, I would remind RAC members to sign the maps for our outgoing members here on the table. And I'd wish everyone a great winter holiday season. And at 8:49, I am bringing the meeting to a close. Thank you all.